Welcome to the regular podcast from Our Voice, Politics Albury Wodonga. In this edition of the podcast, we're joined by Dr. Penny Egan-Vine, chairperson of the Murray Valley Sanctuary Refugee Group, in conversation with Renee Shilg from La Trobe University, Albury Wodonga. In today's interview, Penny and Renee discuss the activities of the Murray Valley Sanctuary Refugee Group, along with the challenges faced by refugee families settling in regional areas, and the assistance that local residents can provide in helping new migrants to settle into the local community. Please enjoy Dr. Penny Egan-Vine in conversation with Renee Shilg.
Can you please explain some of the things your organisation does?
Our organisation is the Murray Valley Sanctuary Refugee Group, and we fundraise money to pay for the airfares and the settlement, the initial settlement costs, for people who are coming to Australia on a humanitarian visa. There are two sorts of visas. There's a 200 humanitarian visa and a 202. The 200, the government sponsors, mm-hmm. and there are about 4,000 a year on that. The 202 visas are sponsored by people who are not part of the government, and the people have to find airfares and assist in settlement. Now, that's often a family who's already come here, but there are in the camps... In the refugee camps around the world, people who are very unsafe mm-hmm. need to get out, but there is no link in any country for yes. them to go to. And we're part of a group that actively sponsors those sorts of people. Mm-hmm. So the people who are significantly disadvantaged in the camps. Yeah. And they are often amazing people. They've come from situations where there's a strong invitation to be violent, and they've chosen not to be, which is why they've had to flee, because they haven't fought back.
And so
we're very pleased with who we've been able to support. But part of it, our group is also advocating for making people aware of the refugees. I certainly know, even 10 years ago, I was quite ignorant. You hear the words, but you don't understand the situation of the complexity. And so part of our job is to help people become more aware of not just the simple illegal queue jumping stuff, but the complexity of what's going on. And so that's... We have fundraising events, a book fair and film nights, and small raffles and things like that. Mm-hmm. But our main event is, once we've identified a family, they've been accepted by the government or the Department of Immigration, and they then arrive here. We have a team of volunteers that help them settle in. Mm-hmm. So they help them find a house, they help them work out. The government provides them with a new start allowance for 3 months. And then they have to prove that they are studying or working, otherwise they've got to start obviously looking for jobs. They also get Medicare, and the group of volunteers, it's usually five or six people attached to a family or an individual, just check up, help them understand what a toaster's for, what you use a fridge for, how to negotiate the bus system, the value of saving, how to understand the food, where to get the food they like or they understand, and how to work out public advertising. And if you've got to advertise food, it's usually junk. Nobody advertises broccoli. And... So we get involved with the families quite intensely in the first 3 months, and then gradually backing off, with the idea officially that we let them go under their own steam after 6 months. In reality, it's more like 12 months. Helping them get education, helping them liaise with the schools, getting the children to school, and understanding why the school would want money, or why their child should go on this excursion or stay back at night, those sorts of things. Helping them work out how to buy a car, how to get their driver's license. And once you're involved with a family, it tends to become a personal relationship rather than just a connection. So it's a great fondness that we develop for the people that we've brought here.
All right. So what countries and backgrounds do the refugees generally come from?
Well, the ones we've been working with have been coming from Africa. The government have been bringing to Albury-Wodonga lots of Bhutanese. And in fact, they've brought about 300 Bhutanese in the last 3 years. They've become almost invisible because there are also in Albury-Wodonga a lot of skilled migrants from India and Africa and Bhutan, and lots of skilled migrants that are quite invisible to the people. Koreans, Chileans. But the people we've been bringing have come from Africa, sub-Saharan, there have been some people from Sudan, Ethiopia, Uganda. The majority have been coming from the Congo. The eastern border of the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, is actually next door to Rwanda. And the conflict in Rwanda actually went into the Congo. And while Rwanda is at peace, that eastern border of the Congo is not. The government are out to get rid of the rebels, and the rebels are out to establish their base. So the Rwanda Hutus are quite violent, and they're the ones that are in the Congo. And the government is alert for any rebels. So you find people are beaten up because they're supposed to be supporting the rebels, and then the rebels come and beat them up because they want their money and they're just desperate to get food. And they're extreme, I guess you'd say they're extreme right-wing people, those people, the Hutus. And so you've got a very dangerous environment where people are not safe. And the stories people tell are just horrific. So they're not safe from the government, and they're not safe from the other people. And being on the border, like Albury-Wodonga, they're invisible to the central powers. You know, New South Wales stops at Wagga and Victoria stops at Wangaratta. So that it tends to be a bit ignored, the eastern border. It's very, a very dangerous place. And we've brought in total 60 people in the last 5 years, and helped them settle. Some of them have been single people. One of them was a single man from Somalia. Most of them are under 30. There's certainly no elderly people. You've got to be able to show that you can work and that you're not going to be a drain on the taxpayers' money. So
are the dangerous conditions the main motivation for them to...
Oh, yes. None of them wanted to leave home. But they're not safe. And they're harassed and targeted. Now, they may be targeted by another family. There was one family that was unsafe in Kenya. They were Congolese. They'd gone to Kenya as missionaries, as pastors, and they fell foul of the authorities because the behaviour of the relatives of some of the people in power is criminal, and they protested, and so they were targeted by the authorities because they were seen as troublemakers and, and liars, because we don't do anything wrong in power. And one of the issues in many of the places in Africa is the level of corruption, based on the fact that the economic system assumes corruption. There's no pay for police. There's very little pay for politicians. But you go into politics to make money. Not to actually try and change things. It's a It's a way of making money.
Mm.
And so it's one of the difficulties they have when they get here is to learn that our system is different.
Mm-hmm. So why are refugees choosing Aubrey Wodonga, or was it a decision made for them?
No, they're offered Aubrey Wodonga. Mm-hmm. They could go to lots of places.
Okay.
They're offered Aubrey Wodonga because we've got a group here. We're linked with a group in Coffs Harbour. Mm-hmm. They've been working for 20 years, and they've brought about 6,000 people to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We're just beginners compared to that. And there are special factors about Aubrey Wodonga.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rural community. People actually settle better in rural communities mm-hmm. because they're more visible. And people are more active in supporting them. There are difficulties with rural communities, but the Aubrey Wodonga has a history of welcoming people from overseas. Go back to the post-Second World War. But there's been a steady trickle of people coming from Colombia and Chile and South America, as well as Vietnam and Laos. And so we've had an integrating into our community. A lot of people over the years. So there's a custom, there's a habit, an assumption in this community that that's one of the things we do, and we're good at it. There are obviously people who struggle with that, but the majority like it well. It's a small, manageable community. We do have a reasonable amount of housing that is available. We've got good medical services. We've got good schools. We're accessible to the bigger cities for people if they need to, so we're not way out in Mildura or somewhere else. And people are... it's a good climate. It's not... Tasmania's very keen and has quite a lot of refugees, but it's very cold down there, and so people are finding the climate here very good. Mm-hmm. And there's also... a reasonable amount of work available. We've also got the universities.
Mm.
And a lot of the people that we've been settling are very aware of the importance of education. And more than half of them are doing either TAFE, well, I would say three quarters of them are doing TAFE courses or university courses. And several have actually completed their university course, finding the bridging course that's offered by Wodonga TAFE really helpful, and just getting on with it.
Yeah.
and the support offered by La Trobe has been fabulous.
Mm.
They've really valued it.
Yeah.
Although the initial boy who came as doing his social work degree said nobody would sit next to him.
Yeah.
And around about halfway through the year he told them that, and they stopped doing it, but they were just frightened. They didn't know who he was. He was very black and very Sudanese. It's, they've learnt a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Are there any issues with refugees coming to a rural area?
Well, I think one of the big issues is it's harder for women to find work.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I know we've tried very much to get them work in shops and things like that, and that really doesn't work. There is quite a bit of... fear around people with black skin. That will change. It'll change because we work on it, but at the moment it's been harder for women to get work. They're not even getting work cleaning. However, the there is a range of activities if people are prepared to. So there's a couple who are, while they're studying, they're also working at the abattoirs. There are others who've worked in the... one chap, the next-door neighbour, got him to help in his bricklaying business. And several are working in the children... the care... children out of home care situation. And that's been... it's been a good option. The... rural fruit picking and things like that's actually not really here because it's up the river or in Shepparton, and so people don't tend to have those sorts of jobs. It's also nice and flat generally,
So while before they get their driver's license, they can ride their bikes, and there's a reasonable public transport system. The negative issues are actually quite small from my point of view. The stories I've heard, they don't talk about the negatives. I guess while there is public transport, unless you've got a car, there are many places that it's hard to get to, and people with families particularly find that hard. One of the issues is also that some of the families coming from a vulnerable background, they're still in the process of thinking the more children you have, the stronger you are. And so the children of five or six, families of five or six children, it's difficult for cars to cope with that. So that's one of the issues for, with not many of us have trucks or those people mover type cars. There is some prejudice, but most of it, the response to it is, if you've been through what I've been through, this is nothing. it's sort of, get a life. There is a recognition sometimes, or a sense of betrayal when someone you expected to understand doesn't. But that's more a response from the locals than it is from the refugees themselves. So I remember one boy, and he was talking to his mother. He'd come as a boat person, and he'd left when he was 14, and it was 6 years before he knew where his family was and what they were doing. And when he found where they were, he would call them very often. And he was in the street talking to his mother, and a woman who was drunk said, "Speak English, you bloody wog," and beat him up.
It's terrible.
And I was concerned for him. And he said, "She was just a stupid woman." and so, you know, their response to it is better than ours.
Yeah, it's a good outlook. So where do the funds that you raise go towards?
Well, the funds go for an airfare. So an airfare for a family may be 12,000 or 13,000. We hear that they're coming about 3 weeks before they get here. So we suddenly have to find 12,000. And we may get another family a month later. So we have to have some funds just sitting there in stock waiting. The other thing that the funds do is go to pay a bond on the house, because that's quite a huge expense initially. As I said, the people are on New Start allowance and they get the child allowance. And they repay the loan out of that Centrelink. And it may be $20 a week, it may be $40 a week, depending on what they arrange to do. And then that money goes to helping them sponsor other members of the family to come. So that's a recycling of the money. And we've just finished helping another family bring their relatives out. One of the things that can happen in is that it takes about 3 years from when you apply to when you get the visa.
Oh, right.
And in the meantime, people get on with their lives because there's no guarantee that they'll get be successful. And so they get married and they have children who aren't on the visa. And then they've got to choose whether they accept the visa and leave their partner and children behind, or whether they knock the visa back and stay in the unsafe environment. So one of the issues that people have when they come is their wife is still back there. Now, we've had one or two occasions where the wives were jealous and didn't understand the time needed, because you've got another 2 years at least. Before the partner can get here. Just the slow bureaucratic process, because with the publicity around refugees, you can imagine the huge workload. And with Christmas Island, I understand that there were 30 people in the Sydney office
And when Christmas Island sort of blew up and the media and everybody are watching what the Department of Immigration is doing, all but two of the people from the Sydney office were sent to Christmas Island to process.
Really?
So the people processing the normal applications, and there are about 60,000 applications a year for 6,000 positions. Mm. They're trying to soldier through this. And every story is mind-boggling. And one of the problems is that sometimes people will exaggerate, or sometimes people will understate it because they don't want to dirty your mind with what they've been mm-hmm. through. So it's difficult actually to work out what's real.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the people, the story is so horrific it becomes unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a demand, a need to have objective evidence of the rape or whatever. And that may or may not be available.
Mm.
So it's not about justice. But even if it is available, you've got to decide we've got six places and we've got 10 applications.
Mm.
Now, do we send the man with his small children to stay in the camp? Do we take the family with no children, just an elderly mother? Who do we take? And those decisions are what the Immigration Department has to make.
Mm.
This is not about what we spend our money on, but it's one of the complexities around issues. So we have, on occasions, discussed giving people loans, but we have so that they can do things. Do you want to stop it again so I cough? Giving people loans so that they can do things like buying cars and so on. We've decided against that, but we have given people loans so that they can support sick relatives back mm-hmm. in the camp, because if you have money in the camps, you can get access to healthcare. If you don't have money, there's, you know, a camp of 96,000 people and one doctor.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got money, you can go into town and buy healthcare from the local doctor, but if you don't have money, then there's too many people. Mm, you can't look after them.
Mm.
So that's one of the issues. One of the rather than the money we fundraise, but the money that we are also given, because people will say, you know, here's $10 or here's $5,000 or we've had some significant donations, and we've had two or three families where they were going to come, they were all lined up to come, we'd connected to them, we knew who they were, we were getting excited, and there's a final medical test before they come, and something came up in that final medical test and they couldn't come. So we've been, the donations that we've been given, we've drawn on those to send back to the camps to help pay for the education, or to give them money so that they can feed themselves reasonably well and have it. Because the people that come, education is not available to everybody in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Only if you can pay $5 a month, you can get access to education.
Mm-hmm.
And here in those countries, the teacher relies on bribing to be able to work.
Mm.
That's the only income they've got. And that bribery goes up the chain. So their inspector expects to be bribed from some of the money that they've been given.
Mm.
And that goes up. So the payment system is based around bribery.
Yeah.
That's what we call it. But it's an economic system that's different from what we would. And we probably should put another word on it. But so their understanding of the value of education is huge.
Mm.
And they hit the ground running. You know, where can I learn? What can I learn? You know, what are the systems for learning? What was the question? Spending funds on. So it can be really hard for them here. I know one chap who's got a wife and two kids, and
he's got a small part-time job, mm-hmm. is sending $20 a month over, and that will educate 4 children mm-hmm. for a month. So he's sending that to the member, to his family that is still in the camp, because it's just so desperate.
Mm-hmm.
One family where they were knocked back because one of the children in the family had cerebral palsy, so they weren't allowed to come. The other children said, "Well, what's the point?" and stopped going to school.
Mm.
And that was the that was the biggest tragedy.
Mm.
Because if you've got education, you can escape.
Yeah.
Whereas here, education is readily available,
mm.
and we don't appreciate what we've got
yeah.
as much. So most of their money goes to the airfares and the loan. But some of our donations go to helping people mm. back in Africa because the stories are just so
yeah.
desperate.
Yeah. Mm.
And preferably, it'd be better if they did stay in their own country and we could support them to stay in their own country. You don't want to go and live in China if you weren't happy here.
Mm.
It's you want your own home to
yeah.
be safe. And that's often why they come. I will go and I will get safe and happy and my children will grow and then I will go back and make it better.
So what can locals do to assist or help out with the refugees who have relocated here?
Well, I think one of the things is to befriend them,
mm-hmm.
Or to be aware and to I mean, the fundraising is a part of it, and some people are just happy to do the fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
People wonder whether there is a group of people who've got to do the intensive support in the first few weeks, mm-hmm. where you pop in every day
mm-hmm.
and you might be there for 2 hours while you talk about what a fridge is for and,
yeah.
and why you've got to flush the toilets and how often do you clean them.
Mm-hmm.
Issue, what's the oven work? How do you use an oven?
Mm.
Because they've not had experienced those
yeah.
Things. Why you don't have a smoking fire in the middle of the dining room
mm.
cooking up the coffee beans. But there is other ways of supporting. Let me go back, I'm sorry I'm talking. The people that do the intensive support do have some training so that they have an idea. But it can be really difficult. It's like antenatal classes or pre-university introduction courses.
Mm.
Until you get there, it's just a lot of words.
Yeah.
And you learn best on the job. You understand what they were trying to tell you, but you can't language that experience. Even, and they come to Australia. They know they will be safe and free. And it's really difficult for them to understand why they're not happy.
Mm.
Because they find, they're not being shot at. They can walk down the street without being raped and take their children, to let their children play on the street. But they haven't found work and they're worried about the people back at home. So they're often unhappy
yeah.
about those sorts of issues. Just being visible
mm-hmm.
is probably the most important thing. One of the things I've been doing recently is looking at the history of mankind, the history of humanity, and looking at where humans evolved. And every human on this earth came from a small number of people who came out of Africa.
Mm.
Not the people in Africa, but we all came from the same source. 220,000 people. So we're all the same. We've got different coloured skin and different language, but we're all humans.
Mm.
And so often people get stunned by the colour or the lack of English, and that paralyses them. But if you look for the brother or the human, and some people are able to do that more easily than others. That's really what they need. Someone to ring up and say, look, there's a good film on. Would you like to go? It's, you might be interested.
Most of the Congolese have French as their second language, or Congolese.
Congo was a French colony. So we got them involved in the French film festival, things like that. We found that most people are keen to help with fundraising, keen to help if you give them a specific task. And that is, look, this boy needs to be picked up every Wednesday after school so he can go to soccer training. Can you do that? Or take the kids to Little Ants.
Yeah.
Those little things. Or explaining what the census is about. Or helping them do income tax. It doesn't have to be a big job, but it's just being willing and able. Or going to the house and helping the women learn to read. English or just talking. One woman has just got a sewing machine, which is fabulous. She doesn't know how to use it. So we've found someone who can help her. Sometimes people want to give donations of goods. That's can be useful, but it's often more of a burden for us than it is to help to them, because we've got to store them. The government provides a house full of furniture. So that's a bed, a chair, a dressing table, a dining room table. It's a very basic thing. And in some areas, people have a choice about what they get. So one girl didn't want a television set. She wanted a computer. Now, because she was living in Queensland at the time, she's come to live here since, she was allowed to make that choice. Whereas here, it's this is what you get, and don't bother us with complexities, because they've just got so many people coming through. Is that going to be enough?
That's good. And do you have any personal views on the Malaysia solution?
Poor old government. Poor old government. I think life will be a lot easier when the politicians get out of the road. Particularly the opposition, or bloody-minded of the, no matter what you do, it's going to be wrong. With the media watching you back all the time, it's like trying to do an assignment where you've written three words and they're saying, that's not going to be any good. I think the government have got a problem because they've got this audience, a very critical audience, watching them all the time. And like working with the environment, no matter what you do, there'll be a group of people who don't like what you do. So if you're looking to please everybody, you're never going to succeed. And part of the problem when the government's trying to find a solution is that they're coming up with something that'll please a very small group of people. And these are the swinging voters. The majority of people are not... have got their fixed views anyway. I think the Malaysia solution is very fraught. The one of the difficulties is the majority of refugees are living in or developing countries. The highest refugee population is in Pakistan, where they've got about sort of 12 million refugees crammed into camps. For us to take the people who are coming here as refugees and put them into a developing country doesn't seem to be a reasonable thing. They've got enough problems dealing with their own people not to be able to put energy or thought into people who've got difficulties. It's at one level out of the frying pan into the fire. However, they do have to come up with a solution. And I know I had friends who worked with Red Cross in the 1990s, and they would talk to me with significant distress about how Australian government was dealing with refugees. But they couldn't raise people's awareness. So Mr. Howard, with his effort with the Tampa, you know, out of everything bad is something good. It made people aware of the reality of the world of refugees. Of the millions and millions of refugees 27 million. There's apparently, according to United Nations High Commission for Refugees, there's about 88,000 who are in significant danger. And Australia takes 11,000 of that. Australia is one of the few countries in the world that has a quota and takes in. England, Italy, many of the European countries don't have a quota, and so they've got to find some way of managing it. America, Canada, New Zealand, Chile have a quota, so they're actively looking, and they are inundated with requests, but there is a, within the government system, a process. I don't think Malaysia has any, well, I know they don't have that sort of quota process. This effort that both governments are putting in to get rid of some of our refugees, certainly Malaysia has got a lot. Their punitive efforts, you know, if they find someone's a refugee, they flog them. And the government is optimistic that if we become violent and brutal as well, we'll stop people being refugees. It's a nice fantasy. It's a limiting of reality, closing the interpretation. But I don't know that it will solve very much. Okay, people will come here knowing that they will be accepted in Malaysia if they come to Australia first. There's no logic in just moving people on. The problem of refugees in the world is an economic one, based on a culture of bribery, a culture where people don't have meaningful occupation, and the problem of poor economic development is very much back in the lap of the developed countries who've prospered from their rapacious approach to the minerals and resources in Africa and Afghanistan and so on, that we've prospered at the benefit of people in other countries. And so to then ask them to take responsibility for, you know, forgive us for what we've done and go away is unreasonable. To say that it's, we don't have anything to do, and I'm just pausing because Australia does do a lot overseas. We could do more. And part of doing more would be acknowledging the reality of the worldwide situation and double our intake. What's happened with the people going to Malaysia is that that 4,000 that are coming back from Malaysia will eat into the 6,000 that is being sponsored to come here. They're not adding on more refugees. They've added another 1,000 to what was being done 10 years ago. It's Thrills for Deals. I don't know that Malaysia... One of the things about the solution in Malaysia is that we will influence some people in Malaysia. And it will make Australians, at least, be more observant of what happened in Malaysia. One of the things that used to happen with people who came on the boats and were put in detention and then sent back, repatriated, was that they disappeared. So some of the refugee advocates actually followed those people up and wrote papers and brought to them evidence of what happened to those people, and some of them just disappeared. Their friends and relatives who saw them when they first said, oh, he was taken off by some people in a car, and we haven't seen him since. So their stories were very accurate. So is this making sense about what I think about Malaysia? It's a good idea that it'll have... It's an appearing to be a solution.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might... It's a stopgap solution. It's not sustainable. People will still come to Australia. There'll just be more. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
That's good.
Nice to talk to you about all this.
That's right.